This podcast is produced by volunteers of U.S. ARC Florida, a nonprofit organization promoting conservation, education, and legislation for reptiles in the state of Florida.
Welcome to U.S. ARC Florida Unleashed. And now, George, Cassie, and Chris.
Welcome back to U.S. ARC Florida Unleashed for part two of our conversation with Elizabeth and Daniel. Let's jump back in.
So let's talk about Elizabeth. Tell us, because I don't know this about you, how did you get, not into U.S. ARC Florida or U.S. ARC, but how did you get into reptiles? What was your first experience?
Well, it's actually a funny story. I don't know if you guys know, but I also own a martial arts school. So one of our teenagers who was an instructor had gotten a ball python and his mother was terrified of it. And he only had it like a week and it passed away. It was a sick animal and he was devastated. So he came into my office and he said, I need you. I need you to go to a reptile show with me. And he goes, as my second mom, I need support and I want to get a new reptile. So, you know, when a teenager says they need you, you're kind of like, oh, okay. So my husband was working on the force and he was LPD and he was out on patrol that day. Mm-hmm. So I took my two youngest daughters and I took him, I took Andy, and we all go over to a Tampa Repticon. And we go in there and I am focused on trying to help him get a new ball python. And my youngest daughter is wanting everything. She's like, Mom, I want this. Mom, I want that. Mom. And I'm like, oh, my good gravy. And my middle daughter is like, Mom, can we just leave? So this was a very interesting experience for me that day. And so I call my husband. I'm like, Emily wants everything. And he's like, just get her a snake for gosh sakes. So I had never owned one and I didn't know, but he had in the past. And I was like, okay. And they were really cool. I was holding them. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And I wanted to do more research. I ended up getting her a snake. We came back with two snakes that day, one for him, one for her. And that was it. The next show we went, I was like, well, I want my own now. And I went and got another snake and it just kind of grew, but I really needed mentors and I needed educated because I didn't know anything. So I spent a lot of time researching and talking to people and just falling in love with them because they're so non-demanding opposed to a dog mm-hmm. or a cat.
Absolutely.
You know, if I don't pick up my snake for a week, it's not mad at me. If I don't talk to my dog for an hour, she's totally bent out of shape.
Absolutely. It's easy to fit them into the lifestyle.
Correct. It was very, very rewarding. And I saw how much, you know, responsibility it taught kids, you know, because then they were taking care of it. And I was like, okay, that's really cool. And people would be like, you let your kids get all these snakes? And I'm like, oh yeah, listen, my kids can have 15 snakes or 20 snakes and turtles and lizards and dragons and whatever, or they can be out on the roads drinking and doing drugs and God knows what else. So they can have as many animals as long as they take care of them. So I've told everybody all the years, it was funny because we've always had a house full of animals, but the kids have always had an active part of responsibility of taking care of them.
That's awesome. So clearly you love these animals because you're a business owner and in multiple capacities. You have a reptile store yourself. So what was that like going from, oh, I'm getting some reptiles because some teenagers thought it was cool and it influenced me to making it your life? Was there like a pivotal
moment? We started and the girls were like, let's breed. And my husband's like, yeah, this will be fun. So the same teenager that I took that day to get his snake, Andy, he came over and we started breeding a little. So then all of a sudden we had all these babies and I'm like, oh boy. So we wanted to expand. And of course, with the martial arts school, I had a private training room and I was like, So we got our business license because I knew we had to have a class 3 and a business license and all that and wanted to do it the right way. And we created a by appointment only, a little area, and it had some racks in it. And then we were like, well, people aren't getting the right supplies. And Petco and Pet Supermarket were so expensive. So I then opened up an account. And we started bringing in a few things and showing proper setup and proper care. And we had just minimal. And I say minimal, I mean, it was a 10 by 10 room That was it. It wasn't anything big at all. That's all we started with. And it was fun. We just did a lot of education. Then we started doing birthday parties and educating more people and getting kids involved. And that made me super happy. And even through our martial arts school, we'd have reptile days. So I'd bring out different reptiles and we'd talk all about them and teach all about them, where they came from, how their care is, what they eat, let kids touch them and feel them and just fall in love, because that's our future. You know, if we don't start young, they're not going to learn. So it was really neat to watch kids that were terrified. Oh my gosh, there's a snake in here. And then they're sitting there holding it and they're like, this is really cool. So that's where it won me over.
That is awesome. And also, what a cute origin story, you know, for your business.
Can I interject really quick here? Elizabeth, don't you still have the first snake that your family got?
Callie, yeah, she's in our shop. She has got a huge tank and everybody's like, why has she got a tank that big? Because she's Callie. So Callie is still with us. We got her in 05. And she has been with us all these years. And if you go in the reptile store, you'll see right behind the registers where the counter is, there's a big tank and Callie lives there. And she was our very first California King, Lavender Albino. And she is absolutely beautiful and highly spoiled.
I see that enclosure really awesome. All the time, but I didn't know who was in there. So now I know. Yep, now I know.
That's Callie.
Yep.
Yep, it's cool. Callie.
We'll all have to say hi to her next time we're in the store, now that we know.
Always say hello.
That's awesome. So maybe it'd be great to hear from both of you about, you know, what resonates with US Arc Florida and your passion for reptiles? Like, what is the thing that keeps you involved in advocating and moving forward and well, being awesome. I don't know what I was going for there. But what is it that keeps you committed through as busy as you both can be in life with your businesses? What keeps you supporting and moving forward?
That's easy for me. It's for the next generation. You know, I have four grandsons now, and my two older grandsons love reptiles. They absolutely positively have a huge passion and they respect animals. And this next generation, if we don't protect it today, it's not going to be around tomorrow. You know, right now we're doing so much building and construction and we're destroying homes and we're prohibiting species. How are they going to survive? How are my grandchildren's children going to know what I know and get to experience the things that we get to experience today? We have to fight for their rights. So we're not only for today, for what we have, but for future generations so they can understand and love the things that we have.
Yeah, that's great. What about you, Daniel?
Well, being involved in this community for so long, I guess I didn't really grow up, even though reptile keepers have always been kind of unusual people in society. I didn't really think about, you know, the fact that what we love doing could be just made illegal overnight, that you wouldn't be allowed to do it anymore. And for a lot of us, we love reptiles, but this is how we interact with them. We keep them. And if people can't see and touch up close what they want to, what they love, then they're less likely to want to conserve it and even keep it existing on the earth. So I want reptiles to persist in the wild, but I also still want people to be, allowed to keep them. And I guess just through the years, I just started to see more and more instances and had some personal experiences myself where I felt like reptile keepers were being treated unjustly by government agencies and honestly, law enforcement officers. I thought people who didn't deserve to be treated like criminals were being treated poorly by law enforcement at times. And I filed some complaints myself and also observed some things. And so I've always had empathy for people who are trying to do things the right way. And still, you know, it's like with FWC in the last few years, it just seemed like they made it more and more difficult to even do things the right way, even if you were trying. And when you create a system that's unfair and so complicated that the officers don't even understand the rules, the people who are having to follow the rules can't possibly understand them. You almost have to be a lawyer to be involved in this industry or business in Florida anymore, just to understand all of it. I think that's really unfair and unjust. So that's part of what motivates me. But it's also just wanting to see the animals that I love continue to exist on the face of the earth with all the habitat destruction and conservation issues we have. I want reptiles to persist into the future.
So quick question on that front. And I think you've, and I think the answer is yes, but you know, I've not read it, but I'm familiar with it. The paper, The Invisible Ark. I'm sure you guys are both familiar with it. I assume that that's something that you subscribe to. The, you know, for those who aren't aware, The Invisible Ark is the idea that that these animals that are facing potential extinction in the wild might only survive in captivity, and it might be, you know, pet keepers, for example, that keep these that keep these animals alive. That's my understanding. Like I said, I have not read the paper, but that is my understanding.
Well, there's a book by Dave and Tracy Barker called The Invisible Ark, and it's just what you laid out. And they are snake breeders, and they're great folks. I've gotten to meet them a few times, and they're making the argument that all these animals that are in captivity and people are breeding are like an ark. It's something that's preserving the animals. And if you talk to zoo people, I mean, a lot of them are very frustrated by the numbers of animals that they're even allowed to keep in zoos, whether they can breed them or not. It's really just not realistic that with all the conservation issues we have in the world and endangered species, that zoos can possibly handle all of these species when a lot of them can only keep one pair of this or that at a zoo. I mean, as breeders, we know what it really takes to crank out a large number of any given species. And zoos a lot of times just aren't really set up for this. And sadly, I mean, we'd like to think that zoos are doing this job, but zoos are kind of going away in a lot of places. I mean, they've been under attack from animal rights activists, and there's a prevailing philosophy that animals just shouldn't be kept in captivity. And unfortunately, that's going to be in the long term to the detriment of animals, because when they can't live in the wild and there's none left in captivity, well, they're just going to be gone. So, you know, whether you like it or not, the motivations when people are breeding animals for commercial purposes, like a lot of our hobbyists and breeders do, that is a motive to continue doing that. So it's capitalism, but the species continue to exist, because there is a motive to keep them going. So whether it's breeding specifically for conservation or even for profit motives, it's still keeping those animals going as a species. And zoos can't do it all. I heard one zoo person tell me there's not enough room in the lifeboats. It's like a lifeboat where there's just not room for everybody. And that's really what zoos are. I mean, they're great. We have zoos that support us, and we want zoos and aquariums to continue into the future, but it's unfortunately more than they can handle to conserve all the animals in the world. And we can help with that.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, kind of, you brought it up earlier before, I believe it was you who brought it up, but I also am a very firm believer of people won't try to save what they don't love.
Exactly.
And that if they don't see these animals, you know, and it's one thing to have a concept of a snake. It is another thing to actually see it in person and interact with it and see it. It's just different, right?
Yeah. They have to have an experience with it. Yep. They have to find that personal connection or bond for it to make an impact on a personal level.
Yeah. Especially when you're asking someone to make a personal sacrifice, whether that's time, money, whatever, right? You're asking them to do that. And I think it's not going to happen if it's something they don't love.
A good example of that is the Orion Society. A lot of you are probably familiar with, they've done a lot of work in conserving indigo snakes, and Orion was named after one of the original donors of that group. His daughter had an experience with an indigo snake in an educational program, hands-on. She was able to hold one and like fell in love with it and made her dad want to help conserve these. And he was a person of means who had some pull to be able to do that. So that's how the organization got started and was even named. It was named after this little girl who had a hands-on experience with an indigo snake in an educational program. So if you don't have things like that happening, I think especially with animals like reptiles, I mean, a lot of them are not as charismatic animals as, say, whales or elephants or, you know, I mean, rhinos. Even rhinos are struggling, and they're big charismatic animals. So reptiles have a lot more issues with that. So we need all the enthusiasm we can get for these animals, and having hands-on experiences is one of the most important ways that that can happen.
Yep. Yeah, it is. It is. And you know, I heard, I had a biology professor when I was in college who referred to that as charismatic megafauna, right? He said, everybody wants to save charismatic megafauna, but you know, freshwater clams, who cares about them? Right. Was kind of his, you know, his thing. And that certainly shaped my understanding that, like I said, people need to have these, they need to have these experiences, right? It's just not enough to look at it in a book or on a video online. It's just not enough. So
exactly.
If it's all right now, I'd like to kind of pivot to what lies ahead for US Arc Florida, right? First of all, let's start. You know, we've talked a lot about a lot of challenges that you guys have dealt with in the past, challenges in the future, but how many of the challenges do you think that you guys are dealing with are unique to Florida? You know, how much is unique to Florida? How much has overlap with the rest of the country? You know, how does that kind of shape out?
Florida's kind of the melting pot. It starts here and then it spreads. So just like with the anaconda, the tegu, the iguana, we can go back and follow history and see where we're at today. But the problems that are here, and we have a unique state that we can have more problems, but the other states follow along and start prohibiting species and following the same ideologies that start here. And that's why US Arc Florida is really important and becoming involved and becoming a member and following us on social media. Because as issues come up, we need everybody to unite. We need to be able to let the masses know that this is being prohibited, or this is, you know, perhaps on the chopping block, and this is an issue that we're going to need to call to action, and we're going to need help and we're going to need support with. So unfortunately, the voices of the board or the voices of, you know, a handful of people will not nearly make the impact that the voices of the state will make. So when we unite together and we are stronger together and people get that ideology, that's when we're going to start seeing change. The US Arc Florida Board is working diligently at A, getting out the information, and B, building communication with FWC so that we can work through issues. But if we don't have the support, it makes it much more difficult and almost impossible sometimes to get to our ultimate goal.
Can we talk a little bit about what kind of support does the organization need? How can people, like the average person, support US Arc Florida?
Well, there's many levels of support, and I think our needs are constantly changing depending on what is happening. What anyone can do is they can become a member. Remember when I'm going up and I'm talking to our executive director, or we're having meetings with our legislators, as a board, we can go, US Arc Florida has X amount of members. And if that X amount is only 100, which it's not, but if I went up and said, hey, you know, to our legislation or even to the executive director, you know, Roger Young, I go, our 100 members, that he's not going to, he'll be like, okay, you got 100 people in the state of Florida. We've got millions of people in the state. But when I go up and I can show, hey, executive director, I'm representing, you know, 100,000 people. These are our members. That is so much more powerful. So take the time, become a member, whether it's a free member or you can become a paid member. Now, what do those monies go to? This is very important. It goes to conservation, education, and also fighting for your rights. When we're having to go to Tallahassee, we're doing that on our dime. When we're fighting lawsuits, though, they're very expensive. And even when we're doing economic studies or if we're getting legal advice, all this costs money. So all that money that we raise goes back into that to help fight for your rights. So this is a crucial point. So people always say, what can I do? And you guys, look, you took it a step further. You know, you guys came to me and said, what do we need? I said, we need to get information out there. We need to be able to keep communicating. We need to keep building. And you guys created this. So it's amazing. Everybody can do something, even if it's little or if it's big. What do you have time for? You know, get involved. You know, it's your future too. It's not just mine. It's not just Daniel's. It's your future. You know, Chris, I know you want to do more with Venomous. This is your future. George, you know, you guys have your animals that you love. And Cassie, we're fighting for you too. And you're fighting for your future now. You've just taken that step. So it's amazing. So everybody can do something. Just a matter of what you want to do and what you're capable of doing.
So you've referred a few times, well, actually it's come up all throughout the podcast, you know, about our relations with FWC. How would you say the relationship with FWC is going right now? Would you say it's on the mend? Are we at least having those communications? Because they started coming after us, you know, a few years ago, but, you know, ever since, you know, the Holy Thursday and the fallout from that, would you say that we're doing better today, or some thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, back in the past, I mean, let's get back and I'll use my old timers on the board. You know, you got your Eugene Bissett and you've got your Michael Coles, and they used to call it my FWC. They had a tremendous relationship with the executive director, and they actually worked with industry. FWC at one point worked with industry. That's how the CSP program got developed. It was industry and FWC working together. We had a leadership change and Eric Sutton came in. When Eric Sutton was the executive director, there was a barrier. There was a wall. There was absolutely no communication. He did not want to work with, you know, the industry whatsoever. And this is when we've seen all the changes and we've seen all the rules come through that just prohibit everything. And the ideology has definitely changed. We requested meetings. There was no meetings granted. In fact, we had a meeting set. And there was several board members that were in it. We were all like, oh, finally, we finally have a meeting. And he sent Thomas Eason, the assistant executive director. And at that moment in time, we knew exactly where we stood when he wouldn't even show up to communicate with us. And in that meeting, Thomas Eason even stated, if it lives and breeds in Florida, we don't want it here. So that was kind of like, okay, we know exactly where we stand now. But under current leadership, Executive Young has definitely opened the door to communication. We are having, you know, dialogue on positive things for the future, but seeing is believing. You know, I tell people all the time, am I optimistic? 100%. We finally have dialogue. We have communication, but at the same time, I'm very realistic. I want to see action. You know, I want to see change. So have we seen things change? Slowly. And there are different things, you know, that we have brought up concerns on. And we have seen, you know, a positive effect from the communication. But at the same time, it's going to take time to rebuild that relationship on both sides. You know, it's been a very long, rough road. So optimistic of the future, but realistic as to what's going to happen.
So one follow-up question to that. Are we talking about maybe possibly reversing some of the worst decisions that FWC has made, or are we talking about just slowing, you know, future damage?
I can't answer that honestly. I mean, go ahead, Daniel. You want that one?
Oh, I was just going to say. I mean, there are certain things that may be unrealistic to expect. Burmese pythons. And likely tegus and possibly even iguanas are probably never going to come back as a normal pet species in Florida. And, you know, unfortunately, that may not be a place that we go back to. We would still like to work for people being able to keep those in regulated situations, you know, in a reasonable way. That's one thing that we've asked for over and over. If we could have these animals instead be like the conditional species that seem to be working. And even FWC staff and law enforcement acknowledged, it's in articles you can read, acknowledged that it was working. So I think we're not going to see a complete rollback, but we're just going to have to wait and see. Right now we have kind of, And I think that's one thing that Executive Director Young has emphasized to us, you know, hey, have we at least stopped the bleeding and the feeling that we're always under attack? I think that he has really worked hard to try to address that with us. And we have seen certain changes. But unfortunately, when Elizabeth was talking about the previous regime with Eric Sutton as the director and Thomas Eason as the assistant director, and he was the acting director at the time of the Holy Thursday massacre last year, they're the people who hired a lot of the staff that still work in the agency. And those are not people that are friendly to us. And there are staff that are great. I have lots of friends in FWC, and I would not demean the people in FWC as being bad people ever. But there are people that genuinely do not believe that people should be keeping animals as pets. That's just an ideology. It's a lot of the animal rights ideology that's kind of crept in. And a lot of the young biologists that are coming out of academia, unfortunately, are kind of being, I guess you could say, indoctrinated into that ideology. And I'm very much for science. I'm not anti-science. I'm very pro-science. But when you get any group of people that hangs together, hangs out together, a lot of times they're going to end up with a similar ideology, unfortunately. So, and a lot of that has not incorporated our input as pet keepers. So we're just going to have to constantly be vigilant. We did just defeat a bad iguana ban bill recently. So, and that was something when we were talking earlier about what people can do. People writing emails and making phone calls made a big difference because legislators heard from you. So you can become a member, but also writing emails when the time comes, making phone calls. You can't expect somebody else to always be there to do it. It's every person's responsibility. And stand up for your other reptile keepers. Just because you keep turtles and somebody else you know keeps lizards, we're all in the same boat. They're coming after all of us eventually. So we have to stand up for each other. So when the time comes, make the phone call, write the letter, participate in the fundraiser, and show up to the meetings. I mean, I know it's rough for a lot of people, but all of you who've shown up to FWC meetings, it had a huge impact. That's part of how we defeated the whitelist regulations that could have become enacted last year. And like Chris, you showed up to a meeting, you spoke on the Holy Thursday massacre, and your comment was something we posted on our, I think it's still our most watched TikTok video. But things like that have a big impact. Just the numbers, as Elizabeth said, having 100 members might not be a big deal, but having 100 people that show up to a meeting is a big deal. So we need thousands of members, but we need hundreds of people showing up to meetings when these issues come up. So that's all the things that you can do to help in this process.
One anecdote I would like to add for our listeners is that the FWC meeting in Miami after the Holy Thursday massacre was the first time that all five of us on this podcast were all in the same room.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even realize that.
Yep. Absolutely. Unbeknownst to us, we were all in the same room. Wow. So, but that awful event, brought this together. So, you know, not that I'd want that to happen again to make this happen. That not saying that at all.
No,
but still,
but
something.
It changed. It did change the game. It really did. I mean, it's very sad that something like that had to happen to kind of expose what was happening to the world. But it really did. I mean, the media coverage of that event went worldwide and it made FWC look really, really bad. And it kind of our reality as reptile keepers was exposed to the world, and it brought a lot of people out of the woodwork. It brought people to the meeting. It kind of united us as a group. So and we've become close. I just talked to Bill at McAdam earlier today, the owner of the boa that was killed by FWC in that event. So it brought a lot of us together, and we continue to be united.
One thing that I remember from after that happened was that, you know, we were talking earlier about the negative representation of reptiles in media. And, you know, it's easy to find a video where you see a snake and someone's always like, oh, only good snake is a dead snake. But I found it very it gave me a lot of hope when I was just scrolling through coverage of the Holy Thursday Massacre, and you see people saying like, I don't like snakes, I hate snakes, but this was wrong.
Absolutely. That's one of the most impactful, like you said, some of the news stories that were not on reptile pages, they were on national news sites, and you'd read through the comments and people are saying, I cried watching this. Just, you know, somebody might not even like snakes, but we all agree that no living thing or no animal should be treated like that. So that's the kind of thing that we have to do to communicate with the rest of the world, that these animals, we love them just like everybody else loves other animals and dogs and cats and their own pets.
So I think to kind of conclude here, what I'm hearing is we need involvement. We need people to become members, right? We need them to interact with their legislature, and we need the rest of the United States for sure to pay attention to what's going on in Florida, because while it's just a Florida problem right now, it has potential to become a United States problem and impact keepers across, because so many states watch what's happening in Florida.
I was saying, Chris, I think you said the most important thing right there. Contacting your legislators, whether we're having an issue or not having an issue, every one of us should know who our senator is and who our representative is. You should get to know them. They should know who you are. That way, you've already got a rapport with that person, whether it's a reptile issue or a different issue. You guys have no idea how important you are to that person. You are the one that elects them. You are the one that puts them in their seat. You are the one that can make them lose their seat. They're going to listen to your voice. So get to know them. Let them get to know you. When there's an issue, we're going to put a call out of action. Daniel's going to have it posted everywhere. And that is when we're going to need you guys, definitely, because that is what stopped the iguana ban. We could right now in the state of Florida have absolutely no iguana species, no spiny tails, no nothing. The rhinos, everything that couldn't even establish here would be gone. But because of you, because of your voice, we still have those, and we did prevail. So thank you for your support. And more importantly, do not forget how important you are every day.
And for those who might feel like reaching out to their legislature might be a daunting task, it really is as simple as an email. It really couldn't be easier. You don't have to talk with anyone directly if you're an introvert like me. So keep that in mind. A simple email goes a long way.
And if you want to, we'll go up to the Capitol together. We had a day last year where a number of people showed up to the Capitol, and we handed out flyers at a FWC lobbying day where they were actually lobbying the legislatures and the legislature, and we were there greeting legislators also. And after we did that event, we went to individual legislators' offices, and even some of our more shy people who were kind of uncomfortable, I went in the offices with them and they talked to their state representative. So, anybody who's willing to go to Tallahassee and do this, I'm always willing to help you do that too. So you're not alone.
Are there any events upcoming, Daniel, that folks should know about?
Well, the session just ended for the legislature, so hopefully we don't have to worry about anything with the legislature until next year. We do have an FWC meeting coming up May 1st and 2nd, and the issues on there that could be concerning to reptile keepers. FWC staff is recommending listing the reef gecko as a threatened species. Unfortunately, as with most state listed species, this would probably prevent them from being kept or bred. And it does virtually nothing to protect their habitat in the wild. And the unusual thing about this one is that many of the experts consider it to be a non-native species, which is very unusual that they are going to protect a non-native species on the state list. Another thing that's happening at this meeting coming up is a lot of you have heard about a road going through Split Oak Preserve. It's a preserve that is in Osceola and Orange counties. They're building a road through it, or trying to, and a lot of people have, including reptile keepers, have stood up against that. There was a meeting back in Orlando in December, and a bunch of reptile keepers showed up. And one of our own volunteers, Jordan Spring, walked the potential footprint of the road and documented a bunch of gopher tortoise burrows there. So that's, you know, our keepers are involved in conservation issues. So if that's something that you care about, that's going to be on the agenda for that meeting, too. A few other dates coming up that you want to keep in mind. Turtle Fest is April 27th at Iguanaland. That's going to be a fundraiser to raise money for conservation of turtles. And a lot of reptile keepers will be showing up to that. I'll actually be playing in the band that's performing at the event. So we're calling our band the Stink Pots for this event. So we did Iguana Fest back in the fall, and we called ourselves Cyclura and the Rock Iguanas.
I love it.
So
I love it.
We're just changing the band name for every event.
Fair enough.
It's all reptile keepers that are going to be playing in the band. So it's going to be fun. That's at Ty Parks, Iguanaland. It's going to be a blast. So April 27th, come to that. Also, Roger Young, the executive director of FWC, is speaking at the Calusa Herp Society in Fort Myers on June 6th. And reptile keepers from all over should come out to this. This is a great thing. This is something we never would have gotten from the previous executive director. And, you know, we've talked about Roger Young has really made an effort to communicate with us. And I think it's really showing great leadership to show up and speak to reptile keepers in person. He's willing to do that. So definitely come to the Calusa Herp Society. You don't have to be a member to come to that. But that's going to be at June 6th in Fort Myers. So go to their website and also their social media and definitely try to make that.
Is it fair to say that that Roger doesn't shy away from the tough questions? Is that fair to say?
Well, I would say he seems to be a very genuine and earnest person. And I think one thing that all of us appreciate about him is so many people we've dealt with in FWC are just like this government bureaucrat speak where you never seem to get a real answer. It's like talking to a wall or something. And he talks to us like real human beings, which sounds like a simple thing, but it's a big deal. He is empathetic, and that doesn't mean that we're always going to agree on everything, but he has made a great effort to improve relations. And, you know, I would say he doesn't always have a ready answer because he doesn't even always know. He wants to be informed on what he's speaking about, but sometimes he'll just say, wow, that sounds like a problem. I need to find out what's going on with that and get back to you. So he wants to know what the problems are and try to help solve them. So we can't fault him for that. He's been really great to talk to and deal with so far. And Elizabeth can probably elaborate on that, but I have nothing bad to say about the guy.
Yeah, I can. And I'll give you an example. An example was we had a lot of people complaining about permitting. As you guys know, it's a constant issue. We did go up there. I did meet with the executive director. We had a couple of the board members. We toured the permitting office and found out that they were really understaffed. He has since then hired more people specifically to try to get permits back at a more reasonable turnaround time. And he's also had Major Grant Burton on top of this and getting issues worked out. And he even said to me, if there's issues, we need to know. So we brought an issue, we brought a concern, and we are seeing a better turnaround. I know my one permit took me almost 8 months to get. My last one took me about 8 weeks, but they had just hired someone and I just talked to someone and they got theirs back in about 2 weeks. So I see a slow improvement, but let's continue to go. But that is an example of communication and progress.
And the main reason I wanted to chase that out is just because I wanted people to know that if they come to this event, they're not going to be stonewalled, right? He's
absolutely,
he's somebody you can talk to, right? You can
100%.
Ask questions. Yes. So people shouldn't be intimidated or thinking that they're going to hit that bureaucratic wall, right?
At the same time, I would ask everybody, as in meetings and everything else, to always be respectful. It does us no good to behave in an unprofessional way. And I think generally our reptile keepers have done a great job. I think a lot of people expected us to kind of go nuts at that FWC meeting back in May of last year after the massacre. And there were a lot of emotions, but I thought we really stayed on track. There were a lot of really well thought out comments, and nobody really went off the rails. So we have to continue to be respectful and have well thought out comments and questions. And luckily with Roger Young, he has not shied away from any of that stuff. But we definitely want to keep this relationship going in a positive direction.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. And I think again, you know, having numbers show up. And like you said, keeping it respectful and I think it can only help us.
Well, and even if we're not having a topic at a commission meeting, maybe it's something that you go, man, there is nothing for me to really show up at. But if there's a topic at all and you have the ability to show up and let them know that you exist. Let them know that we are powerful in numbers, you know, because if it's just Daniel or myself or a couple of board members and the same three or four people, they're like, oh, it's them again. But I know at one meeting, people are like, I don't want to talk, but I want to be here. And I stood up and I said, if you're with the reptiles, raise your hand. And they all raised their hand and they were like, wow. It didn't mean they had to speak, but they understood that we were all on the same page and we were there for the same purpose. There is power in number peoples, whether you like it or not. We can unite together. We're going to be a lot stronger and we're going to be able to get a lot further.
I have to admit, for the May meeting last year in Miami, George and I attended, and I had no intention on speaking. Like, this was our first FWC meeting. We cared about the topics on the table. And I think it was day one, maybe an hour or two, and we were like, yeah, we need to sign up to talk on these issues. So I'm an introvert. Like, I really am. I'm a pretty quiet person. But I had to say my piece, you know, and I went in there again, no intention, but I was, you know, moved at seeing the sense of community that showed up. I mean, we all care about this, you know, we're in the hobby for a reason, or we're in the industry for a reason. So if you have something to say, like, don't shy away from it. It's important.
And let me add something else too. If you are at a commission meeting and you sign up to speak, but you really don't want to speak, and you know someone that's gone before you, or you can raise your hand and say, I'm in support of this, or I'm, you know, opposed to this. And that carries a lot of weight opposed to even going up and just communicating. So you don't have to always go up and give a whole speak, but just, I oppose this, you know, and I support all those that oppose this, instead of reiterating what other people have said or trying to, you know, people get nervous. I don't want to speak. Just let them know that you're there.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much covers everything we wanted to cover with you two today. Thank you very much for your time and for all the work you do. And, you know, looking forward to having you back on a later episode.
Well, thank you so much for having us. I'm really excited about where this is going to go. And I just applaud you guys for making this effort. It's great to have you as part of the team. And takes a little weight off my shoulders too. I really appreciate it. And I know everybody involved in US Arc Florida does also.
On behalf of the entire board, I want to thank you guys. It is so important. You have no idea. We can reach more people. This is going to be awesome. The more voices together, here we go again.
Yep.
Together, we will be stronger. So thank you, everybody.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We would like to thank Elizabeth and Daniel for joining us today on the inaugural episode of this podcast, and we would love to have your support as members of US Arc Florida. So please like, comment, and subscribe, and don't forget to follow US Arc Florida on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and updates.